Well, good morning. Great to have you here. Thank you, Greg and worship team there, as we kick off a new series, which we're calling Love Your Neighbor. And so we spent the summer talking about prayer. And Steve mentioned earlier our church mission statement, which is, fill in the blanks for me, we exist to experience God. We engage our... and we do this together. So the experiencing God part we covered during the summer in terms of prayer. And we had a great summer series doing that. And now as we move into the fall, we're going to talk about the two second parts of our mission statement, which is engaging our world and doing it together. And so we'll be talking about that. And so when I say the word love your neighbor, you know, we often think of neighbors being geographical, but it's far more than that. Your neighbor can be across the street, but it could be the person across the pew. We'll hear in a few weeks from our Mexico team and how they neighbored people down in Mexico for a week's time in a different culture, different language. Stephanie sharing earlier where she's going to head off to, and she will neighbor people perhaps over in Thailand, like she mentioned, is one of the possible places. And so when I use that word neighbor, I use it broadly. Yes, it includes our literal neighbors, our geographical neighbors. And in fact, I will do one message that will talk a lot about that. And in fact, I'm going to give you a fridge magnet. Why don't we stick it up on the screen there, Dale? Fridge magnet like this, that where you can jot in the first names of your neighbors, the people who live around you, as you pray for them. And I'll ask you down the road something about your neighbors, like who are they? What are they interested in? Why? Because we are all called to love our neighbors, whether our geographical neighbors, whether the person across the aisle at church, or the person across the table in a small group, or whether it's a person across the world, that our neighbor is the next person that we see. And so I'm excited about this series. And you might ask, well, how did it come about? And Ralph mentioned about our elders talking about engagement. When I asked our elders, what should we talk about in the fall, there were some comments about, what about getting people engaged, getting people connected? I asked our staff, what should we talk about? And we had some conversations around that. And I remember the table metaphor that you see on the program and up here comes from Pastor Chris. He said, What if in our community people said, I'm going to eat one meal a week with another? One meal a week out of the 21 meals, 7 breakfasts, 7 lunches, 7 suppers. What if one of those meals was with someone else, another family from Grace Point, or a neighbor, a geographical neighbor coming over, or a lunch with a coworker, or whatever it may look like. Hence the table metaphor that we're going to use in this series, because a lot of loving our neighbor happens over food. And so we're going to have opportunities to eat together. In fact, as you came in, you got a ticket. We're going to have a draw at the end of the service, a chance to win lunch and with various staff. And so this week it's Pastor Greg, so you got a chance to win lunch with him and his family, $100 value. You can go out, so we'll draw that in a few minutes' time. And, you know, we're going to have next week our homecoming barbecue. We'll also invite some of our Syrian neighbors, refugee neighbors over in this series. We'll have a halal lunch again here. And so it's going to be a lot of fun stuff happening during this series. And I've got the salad bowl on here. It comes from Scott McKnight. He says, church can often be like a mixed salad. So I want you to imagine, you know, you're putting a salad together. And so you got some lettuce, got cucumber, maybe some carrots, throw some tomatoes in there, some celery, mushrooms. Who likes mushrooms in their salad? Okay. Whoa, we got a lot of mushrooms fans. Okay. What else? Onions. Who likes onions in there? Okay. A few onions. Okay. I won't get too close to you after church. But okay. What else? What else am I missing? What else can you throw in a mixed salad? What do you like? Shout it out. Sunflower seeds. Nuts. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I even got some up here. What about flaxseed? Bacon? Okay. I heard bacon. Yeah. Where's the meat? Somebody's asking. Needs some protein in a salad, you know? Sorry. What else? Dressing. Yes. Yeah. You know, I know some people are kind of like a cream kind of dressing, ranch. Some people are more oil-based. Who's more like a cream kind of... Okay, who likes more oil-based, like a balsamic vinaigrette? Who's like, you know, got to get the olive oil and make my own salad dressing? Who's like that? Okay, some of you are like that. Okay, you know? And So all kinds of things go into a mixed salad. In the same way, our church, you know, the early church was a variety of people. In fact, Dr. Paul Oakes has talked about the typical early church gathering, which, of course, wouldn't have been like this with hundreds of people. It'd be a small gathering in a living room around a table kind of setting. And he says a typical early church gathering might be a craftsman, his wife, a couple of male slaves in the house, a female slave, might be a dependent relative. Then some other people would come in, maybe a couple slave owners, a couple of slaves whose owners allow them to come, maybe a couple homeless people, might be one or two migrant workers, some Jewish folks, perhaps an enslaved prostitute. You've got this broad spectrum of society that made up the early church. And no wonder Paul, who wrote like half of the New Testament, again and again talks about love being the core of the Christian life. Why? Because he got these churches like the Church of Galatia, the Church at Ephesus, the Church at Corinth, Church at Rome, etc., made up of this wide spectrum of people, like I just read. In the same way, our church, you know, we've got a wide spectrum of people from different walks of life, you know, different moral backgrounds, different socioeconomic status, different educational achievements, different cultural ethnicities, etc., etc. We are a mixed salad, but God has brought us together as the church, as His bride, as His people. And we are called to love one another. Everybody say that word, love. When I use that word love, we've got to again go back to what the Bible says about love. Because it's easy for us when we hear love our neighbor, we think of love through the cultural lens. Because we've all been informed through the culture what love is. And we might, you know, think, oh, okay, love, when we listen to, let's say, a Justin Bieber love song or see it in a movies, you know, that portrays love a certain way. Even if we look it up in Merriam-Webster Dictionary, we might find a definition like love is an intense feeling of deep affection. And that's true. Emotions form part of that, but it's far deeper than that. And so when we say, I love chocolate, or I love a certain salad, I don't know why I put chocolate salad together, but you know, that's far different than loving our neighbors. See, we tend in culture to equate love with an emotional sensation, you know, a pleasure by satisfaction. We equate it basically with to say it chemically, with the release of dopamine in our brains, right? And so we talk about things like falling in love or things like, oh, I just love that food. And what we're saying is, yeah, the dopamine rush that we got in our brain. But loving our neighbor goes deeper than that. So I invite you to turn with me to Mark chapter 12, either in your Bible or in your mobile device. Mark chapter 12, you can follow along in YouVersion online, or in the program is the insert. Mark chapter 12, we're going to see what Jesus has to say about love. Mark 12, I'm going to read verse 28. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" Okay, so they had been debating. If we look a little early in Mark chapter 12, we see that the Sadducees had come up to Jesus and they were asking him a question about the afterlife and marriage and remarriage and that kind of thing. And they're trying to engage Jesus in a debate. And now a Pharisee, this teacher of the law, who believed in the resurrection, he noticed, okay, Jesus is good at sparring with these guys. Now I'm going to ask him, you know, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Which is the most important? And when he refers to the law, that's referring to the Torah, you know, the first five books of the Old Testament there, and where there are 613 laws. And what the Pharisees would do was they would take the 613 laws and they'd call some of them, they'd kind of almost put them in a list, like heavier versus lighter. And the heavier laws were like, oh, those were the really important laws. Those are the ones that are really significant. Those are the ones that you got to make sure you don't mess up and you follow that one. And then they'd have some that are lighter. you know, and say, well, then that's not that crucial or that important. You know, we can sometimes do the same thing, right? We sometimes say things like, well, that was just a little white lie, you know, when we were trying to kind of gauge lies per se. And so they'd have these heavy and these light laws, and they say to Jesus, well, which one is the most important out of all of these 613? And so let's see what Jesus says where he quotes the Shema there, Deuteronomy 6. Verse 29, the most important one, answered Jesus, is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind and your strength. And the second is like this. And that's when he turned heads, because they're like, what? The second is like this. Nobody messed with the Shema. What's he doing here? Deuteronomy 6 says, love God with all that you got. They understood that. They recited that. Pious Jews would recite that twice daily. But Jesus has shown us that we can't separate love for God from love for fellow human beings. And he says, the second, verse 31, is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. This is the greatest commandment. And like I said, we spent the summer talking about the first part, loving God with all we've got. And now into the fall, we'll talk about loving our neighbor as ourselves. We define love not by popular culture, not by what the latest song or latest movie might say, but rather by looking at God, the God who's revealed in the Bible. And we watch this God. This God who in the very beginning calls a people to himself. In Genesis 12, he makes a covenant with Abraham. And he says, I will be with you. He sets this commitment to the people of Israel. And so we see all through the Old Testament, God in loving his people. And we see him loving the church in the New Testament. We see him loving his son Jesus. In fact, we see God loving the whole world. How do we learn what love is like? We learn by getting to know the God of the Bible. This God who's madly in love with us. And then his love becomes our love. And so we learn love by watching God. And as we watch God, we see that love is hard work. That God's an incredibly patient God all through the Bible. That he's a God who commits to being with his people and for his people. With. Everybody say that word with. That he's with. He's with his people. I put a couple of verses on your outline there. I will walk among you and be your God, and you will be my people. Or Zechariah 8:8. That I will bring them back to live in Jerusalem. They will be my people, and I will be faithful and righteous to them as their God. Repeatedly, we see this in the Old Testament, that God is saying, I will be with you, my people. It speaks of his presence and his commitment to not leave his people. It's not just an emotional rush at the moment, but it's a core commitment, a rugged commitment to be with his people. That God commits not only to be with his people, you and I, but to be for us. That he's for us. A couple of verses I put in your outline, Revelation 21:7. Those who are victorious will inherit all this. I will be their God and they will be my children. Romans 8:31. What should we say then in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? God is for us. God is for you. God covenants to that. He is your advocate. Your proponent, he's by your side. And as we recognize this God who loves us so much, who is with us and for us, and we journey with him, then his love fills our hearts, as Romans 5 says, and then we are able to love our neighbors as ourselves. As we walk with God, his love purifies and grows our hearts and dwells our hearts. And our love becomes the love that Jesus describes here in Mark chapter 12. Because the word he uses for love there is the word agape. Everybody say agape. Agape. He uses it both in talking about love for God, agape for God, and then also love for neighbor. It doesn't like he waters it down and says, oh, okay, for neighbor, then you can do just phileo. No, it's agape. It's that unconditional love, the love with no strings attached. The love that says, I love you, regardless of whether I get good feeling about that or not. I love you through the hard times and the difficult times, as well as the good times, because love is hard work. Agape love. You saw that quote up on the screen during the offering, Charlie Brown saying, I love humanity, but it's people I can't stand. And all of us can kind of relate to that. Because loving your neighbors, loving your geographical neighbors, sounds great until you have them over. And then they want to smoke pot in your place or on your deck. And you're like, oh, really? Oh, I didn't know about that. Loving your neighbor at church sounds like a great idea. And then you get together with people in small group, and then you realize, wow, they're just as broken as I am. But we can't really love people until we know them. Otherwise, it just becomes a fear. Otherwise, it just becomes something we wax eloquently. Oh, I love my church. But if we don't know people, are we really being loving? There's got to be an action on our part. It's got to be reflected in our schedule. Loving others means getting to know them. To love one another. And that happens, of course, best outside of Sunday mornings in a small group setting. As Steve mentioned, we've got various discipleship groups that are going, and we want more to be continually happening here at our church. Different types of groups. Whether it's, you know, three guys meeting together at Tim Hortons, doing life together, talking about what they're learning in the Bible, how they're growing in God, how they can pray for one another. Or a whole bunch of families getting together, and sometimes those groups are more chaotic. But that's okay, you know, because kids are running around, kids are screaming, there's kids in diapers, and somebody's got a smelly diaper, and every parent is hoping that it's somebody else's kid that has a smelly diaper, and it gets messy, but it's doing life together the way God intended us to do it. Loving means getting to know others. And that takes time, right? Something that's so precious and so scarce for each of us. As the old saying is, that love is often spelt T-I-M-E. It takes time to love one's neighbor. But we can't hurry relationships, right? Whether it takes place in a living room in an evening or at 6:30 in the morning at Starbucks before work, it takes time. It takes time to love and be loved. To care for and be cared for, to know and to get to know. And it means we've got to overcome our fears, right? The fear of, oh, you know, who am I going to be in group with? And what if I don't get along with these people? The fear of, oh, what if there's a needy person in my group? You know, Brene Brown says, we often divide the world between those who are helpers and those who are in need. But really, those divisions don't exist, do they? Because all of us are sometimes helpers and sometimes in need. It just depends on the time. It just depends on the area. And so we bring all of what we are and who we are into small group. And yeah, there's going to be misunderstandings. Why? Because we're a mixed salad, right? And some of us are a little more lettucey, and some of us are a little more carroty, and some of us are more grated cheesy, and some of us are more whatever. But that's the beautiful thing. And yeah, sometimes there's different values and misunderstandings that happen. But that's the beautiful thing about the thing that God has created called the church. And the core of the Christian life is love. And Jesus said the greatest commandment, the second half, is to love our neighbor as ourselves. And our neighbor comes in all shapes and sizes and cultural backgrounds and geography, etc. It's not bound by a certain culture or space or citizenship. Your neighbor's the next person you see. And so you and I can love our neighbor here on Sundays, today after church, next Sunday at the homecoming barbecue. I invite you to stay and love your neighbor. Maybe you'll get into a deeper conversation with somebody you already know. Maybe you'll meet somebody for the first time to connect, to engage. You know, maybe you'll have a chance to just kind of step up and help somebody. Maybe you'll see Pastor Chris. You know, Pastor Chris, whenever he shows up at our staff meeting on Tuesday mornings, it's kind of like this. He's usually 5 minutes late, and he always starts with the same thing. I didn't get much sleep last night. Why? Because he's got three kids under the age of five, you know? That's what he says every Tuesday morning staff meeting. I didn't get much sleep. And he always looks like that, you know? See his wife Sheena here? I mean, she's always looking cool, calm, and collect, but maybe next Sunday you'll see Chris, and he'll kind of have that ragged look, and he'll say, how's it going? He'll say, I didn't get much sleep last night, you know? And he'll be holding, maybe Sheena's off talking with some friends, and he'll be having Asher's side and Madeline, and he'll be holding the baby kind of thing, and you can go up and you love your neighbor, you know? And so if I see Chris, you know, I'd go up to him, and I wouldn't say, hey, can I hold the baby? Because that'll give the wrong signals to my wife, eh? You know how women are? You know, she'll think, oh, my husband wants another baby, no, you know? So just got to be careful on that one, you know? But I'll say, hey, Asher, you know? Hey, you know, three-year-old hyper Asher, come on with me. Let's go run. Let's go play a game or something like that. We love our neighbors, you know? Or maybe you'll see Kim, our director of ministry operations, and, you know, maybe you'll take her on in the gladiator joust, you know? And she's a competitive sort, you know, so let her win. She feels better about herself that way, you know. You love your neighbor that way, you know. Or if it's warm like this, we got to get a dunk tank, you know. And we got to get Steve up on that dunk tank, eh? You know, and I think we'd have a big lineup for that, you know. Love your neighbor, you know. It's all kinds of ways we do it on Sundays, and we'll do it in this series and between Sundays to be a church that truly loves one another. Friends of ours were staying at our place this summer, and they were talking about a friend of theirs who had gone for 4 years to a Christian church. For 4 years, he walked in the church and walked outside the church, Sunday after Sunday. After 4 years, he thought to himself, I don't know anybody in this church. I come and I sing along and I listen to the message, but I don't really connect with anybody here. He decided to go down the street to the Mormon church. The first Sunday he was there, somebody said, hey, who are you? You want to come and join us for lunch? He stayed at that church and kept getting invitations out. And here's a community of people, Mormons, who other than single families, which they've done an awesome job of resourcing, are generally very large families. I mean, the Mormons I know have 4 kids, another family has 6 kids, another family has 7 kids, and yet they weren't afraid to say, hey, come along, join us. Join us at the table. Do life together with us. What about you and I? What about us as a church? Will we be a church that connects and engages with one another? Why do we do this? We do it because God has neighbored us. That's the reason we love our neighbor. Why don't we stick it up on the screen there? The verse, John 1:14 from the Message. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. That's the incarnation, right? God becoming human. And you and I, in a sense, are His representatives here on this earth, and He calls us to love our neighbor, whether it's across the pew, across the street, or across the world. What about if you and I were to do that this fall, and particularly to engage and connect with one another? And so hopefully you've had a chance to fill in the discipleship group registration here. And so check off there. If you're currently part of a group, that's great. That's meeting again. That, you know, we put some criteria on there. Meets at least twice a month. Pray and reflect on Scripture. So when I go play tennis on Monday nights, that's not my discipleship group. You know, that's a bunch of guys that I play tennis with. You know, we're exercising, we're having a good time, but it's not discipleship that's happening there. And group options, there's all kinds of options. As Steve said earlier, we want to try and accommodate you as much as possible in terms of times of the week, dates, frequency, meeting once a week, every second week, whatever, close to your home, so there's a place to put your address on there. Family friendly, so a place that the kids can come also and be a part of that. We want to be a church that does life together. And so if you can fill that out right now, and then the hospitality team will come and collect those. Or if you're on YouVersion, you can click the link right there and go ahead and fill it online there. We love others because He first loved us. So hospitality team, why don't you come to the front? And as they're coming to the front collecting those, why don't we draw here, get your tickets out, and lunch with Pastor Greg and his family, $100 value here. So depending again how big your family unit is, if it's you're a single person or family, you know, you might be eating kind of nice, or family of six, you might end up at McDonald's here. So let's see what happens here. Okay, last four numbers, 5036. Someone, 5036. Right here? Yeah, Jerry? Okay, come on up here, Jerry. You met Pastor Greg? Okay, woohoo! Okay, all right. You guys can go for lunch today, or if it doesn't work out today, you figure out a time with them. All righty, congrats there, Jerry. Woo-hoo. All right, if you didn't win today, you'll have other opportunities to win, or just have an opportunity to engage with somebody else. You can invite them for lunch, and we neighbor others because God has neighbored us. Worship team, take it away.